Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Boy, what weather we had yesterday. Depending on where you are, high winds. We all had some heavy rain. I tell you, I saw so much rain fall so quickly. It was mind-boggling. Today, meteorologist Jason Goff joins us to answer your questions, whether you like it or not, formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany. Jason now runs a forecasting website, jasonsweather.com. If you have a question about thunderstorms or hurricanes or tropical storms, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Jason and the weather coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the line, we're joined by meteorologist Jason Goff. He is here to answer your questions about weather. Formerly of Channel 13, Jason's forecasts have been on these airwaves for years. He now runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. If you have a weather question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Again, that's 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. In general, it's not a climate change show. If you have a general question about that, that's okay. But really, it's about the immediate weather. Jason Goff is here, 800-348-2551. Jason, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, sir. Nice to talk to you as always. How are you today, Ray?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
I'm good. Where are we on that bottle of scotch? We discussed this last time. You know, we're going to let it slide this time again, but, you know.
Yeah, well, next time you're in the studio, although I think that, you know, management may look askance at that sort of thing, but we could find out.
I'm sure.
That was a great, not a great storm, but that was a huge amount of water very fast yesterday. How much rain did we get?
Oh, man. It was the fourth rainiest day on record for Albany for that official reporting site, 3.92 inches. But I saw reports of over five kind of scattered about. The heaviest rains were pretty much along the Hudson Valley and west. Yeah. And it was really something. But just to kind of put, you know, everybody always says sort of anecdotally, hey, it's been a dry summer. It's been a wet summer. We know it's been a dry summer. And I'll tell you what, we had yesterday afternoon, I geek out over stuff like this. we had more rain yesterday afternoon between 3 and 5 o'clock, which was 2.16 inches, than we had in the entire month of June, which was just under 2 inches. And then yesterday afternoon or late morning through the afternoon from around 11 through whenever the rain quit there, 5:30, somewhere in that, we had more rain than we did in the entire month of July. So it was time to pay the check, Ray, and certainly we did that.
You know, and driving home, I left here at about, maybe 3:30, 3:40. It took a lot longer to get home because I had to avoid low areas that I knew would be flooded and actually even had to turn around a few other times where spots that I didn't think would be flooded were flooded. It was so fast and so much rain. Now, we had tornado warnings yesterday. And
we had a couple.
You and I have talked about this before, and if I understand what you have said, tornado warnings almost always or usually mean that there is a tornado or there is about to be one.
Yeah, the radar has certain parameters, and if you cross over those thresholds or parameters, if you will, it triggers a warning. You know, in tornadoes, because we actually, that's two tornado watches that we had in 3 days. We had one on Sunday, which was of a completely different animal. And there actually were three tornadoes that the Weather Service folks went out and surveyed in southern Berkshire County around Sandusfield and then into the northern part of Litchfield County. So that was Sunday. And then yesterday we had a few warnings as well, one over in the southern Greens. And then we also had one that had come up through Columbia County, like right around Valencia. And, of course, everything was moving northwest. So that warning was issued for that part of Columbia County into the Hudson Valley from there. But, you know, the thing about tornadoes, when they spin up, whether they do or not, you know, when a warning is issued, they generally don't last very long. They're generally not very strong. You get more wind damage generally from straight line winds at least when you're this far inland from such a storm. Now, you can get some pretty nasty spin-ups that are right along a coast, for example. There were a lot of tornado warnings yesterday down along the Jersey Shore, the northern part of it, and even up around Long Island. There were quite a few warnings there and into southern Connecticut. But once you get inland, things start to change a little bit. But it was still enough to spawn, to spark a couple of warnings for sure.
And we've also talked about this before. Jason Goff is our guest. If you have a weather question, we will get to phone shortly. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You and I have talked about this before, but explain again, how is it that a tropical storm or a hurricane generally spawns tornadoes?
Well, it's a good question. Think of it like this, right? Like, and kind of prefaced it by talking about Sunday was a whole different animal. So when you talk about a tornado situation, generally speaking, be it in the Midwest or in the Plains or in New England, you have a couple of different factors that come into play, right? You have to have the instability, which is the heat and or at least a fair amount of humidity and buoyancy into the air. And then you have to have something that's got to lift that up. And that could be, generally when you're talking about a tornado situation, you're talking about shear overhead. So you have winds that are changing direction with height. And so you can get that. And then, of course, if you have a cold front or something that's on the way, you get all these things that are lifting all of this moisture into the atmosphere. It gets turned around, twisted around, and that's what can spawn a tornado. Mm. Now, when you're talking about a tropical system making landfall, think about that as like a package deal, right? So you have everything. It's a one-stop shop with a hurricane or any kind of a tropical cyclone, a storm or a hurricane. So what happens there is you certainly have the moisture, right? We saw that yesterday with all the rain. But then you also already have built in, if you will, that twisting with height. So that is what's going to spawn those tornadoes. Plus, when you have tornadoes that move inland, now that's not to say that you can't have water spouts, but when you have, that is a tornado over water, when you have these things that make landfall, friction takes over, right? Because if you're over the water, it's a relatively smooth surface as opposed to land, which has trees and buildings and mountains and valleys and all kinds of stuff. So that is going to create some drag, which will enhance that shear or that twisting in the atmosphere with height. So it's really sort of a one-stop shop. But as I said, fortunately, they don't generally do a lot of damage. They're not on the ground very long. I don't know if the Weather Service, I didn't check this morning, but I get the sense that they did not go out to check out that area that was warned for in Columbia County. When the warning was issued, the velocities were not very impressive on the radar, which again is typical. So, some storms spawn a lot of tornadoes and they can do a lot of damage along the coast or a few miles inland. But other storms, you'll have a few here and there and that'll do it.
Jason Goff is our guest. We talk weather today on the program. We'll take a break in a moment. Before we do that, your name actually came up last week. Well, no, it's okay, man. Every year, my family and I, we go up to southern Maine and we hang out at the beach. And the weather was spectacular the whole week. One night, however, early evening into nightfall, we watched over the ocean a very distant lightning storm. It was nowhere near us. The skies were beautiful where we were, but it was spectacular to see. And we started talking about lightning. And the reason I'm saying this is because it was only a week ago. I said, all right, I'll ask Jason Goff next time. What is the mechanism that causes lightning?
Well, with lightning, you generally have, well, not generally, what you have is you have a lot of static electricity, right? That's what lightning is. So lightning is essentially like, in the wintertime, if you walk across the carpet or wherever it's really dry in the house and you touch a doorknob, you sometimes it'll light you up. You know what I mean? And that's essentially what lightning is. So in the atmosphere, obviously on a much larger scale, you have a lot of cold air aloft. So you have a lot of ice in the atmosphere up there. So you'll have, for all intents and purposes, sleet, right? Frozen raindrops and things. And so that they bump into each other and they develop a charge, and it's that potential difference that creates the discharge between the storm, the cloud, and the surface. So it'll make its way down you know, down to the ocean or down to a tree or to, you know, God forbid, a house or whatever the case may be, or the ground. And that's essentially how lightning goes.
Amazing.
Now, you didn't hear any thunder, I take it.
No, it was very far away, and the waves, actually the tide was coming in, so we really couldn't hear the thunder if it was there, but it was so far away. I only wish my kids were listening to this right now, but I assume that because there's an Xbox and a PlayStation, they don't even know you're on the air right now. But I'll try to convey your message. Jason Goff is our guest today. It's weather on the program, and we'll get to the calls in a moment. 800-348-2551. Fox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest today, and we'll get to the phones in just a second here. What's happening with you, by the way, Jason?
Oh, man, I am just enjoying the summer. It's kind of weird because, you know, I'm a big track guy,
yeah.
And it's been a bummer to not be able to go up there. I am going to go up one Friday and do some radio. So I've got to go and get a COVID test for that because obviously they're not letting anybody in unless they know that they're not COVID positive.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to doing that. It'll keep my streak that's been going since 1977 alive. and of course, I'm doing my forecast every day for my website and for the Times Union. I enjoy very much working with those guys. And the other thing, which is sort of out of left field in a sense, is that I am selling and distributing PPEs.
No way.
It's a story for another time.
Yeah.
But I have masks and hand sanitizer and UV boxes and all kinds of things. And oddly enough, I put everything on my website because I have a good following there. And it's been easy for people. I've been getting in anywhere from 3 to as many as 12 or so orders a day. You can just go on there, see what you like. You can pay for it.
Amazing.
And then I ship it to you or I deliver it myself, depending on where they are. And it's been... I'll tell you what, man, it has really been an interesting experience, and I'm more than happy to do it because I have 2 really good suppliers, and I'm just happy to be able to deliver things to people that they need and may have a hard time finding.
Amazing. You know, if you ever come back and we do crack that scotch, you are not to make that into hand sanitizer, all right? Is that a deal?
No, sir.
All right, let's
go.
No,
that is definitely a deal, yes. There are no booze in our hand sanitizer,
man.
I promise you that.
Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Cindy in Scotia, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Yes, my husband and I have a question relevant to our geography and weather. The first one is that when we get the weather report several times a day through your station, the Capital District is grouped with the Berkshires north of I-90, and we find that a very interesting blend since they are higher than we are here in Scotia and more mountainous. And I wondered how the prediction is made based on that difference in our geography.
Great question.
That's a very good question. The Berkshires are not considered part of the Capital District. So I kind of, you know, and it is hard because we do have so many elevational changes, you know, over a short distance. So I do my best when I write up my forecast to really try to delineate, you know, kind of who will get what and where and when and all of that. So, yes, the Berkshires definitely will get better or different weather, I should say, than you would in Scotia. Now, Scotia certainly would consider part of the Capital District because you're close in terms of the radius and all of that. But as far as, you know, like north of I-90 or the Thruway westbound, then you're obviously getting out of the Capital District and heading out 90 out the Thruway. That's a whole different weather scenario out there, too, especially in the wintertime when you're talking about the potential for lake effect snow. So everything is different, and you have to try to, as you know, I don't have the time constraints of television anymore, which is one of the many bonuses of forecasting without that. So I can write things out and explain things better in my own writing, and hopefully people can understand the forecast for where they are or where they're going to be, because that is my ultimate goal.
Yeah, it just seemed odd to us to group that together. We listen faithfully a couple times a day, and it's just an odd combination. The other question we have is relevant to thunderstorms particularly, or weather coming to us from the west. We will see that there are storm warnings and Scotia or Schenectady is listed, and the storm is coming right straight across. And just before us, it seems, the storms head south, more down to Duanesburg or up towards Galway or Saratoga. And especially in our dry month of June, it was very frustrating because they were getting rain north and south of us, but not here. And we wondered if the position here with the Mohawk River or any of that had an effect on the storms not staying on the path that was predicted.
Generally, no, because believe it or not, I've heard that from pretty much every locale in the area. I've had a lot of people that'll say that, you know, the storms always split when they come toward us. Now, certainly the Mohawk Valley, you know, the valleys do have some, you know, small micro effects on weather, but not to the point where you can consistently say, well, you know, we're not going to get a storm here, that it's coming. It just has to do really with the setup of the day. It might seem like that. And June was a dry month for everybody for the most part. I mean, you know, there might have been a few spots that did okay if they happened to get underneath a big storm that dropped an inch and a half in a day or whatever. But overall, you know, in terms of locales being, you know, having this sort of force field around them, that's just not really the case. It's just more of a perception, because certainly, you know, as you know, in Scotia, you can certainly get some humdinger thunderstorms there that'll come right through. So it's not necessarily any orographic effects or any terrain effects that are going to drive storms one way or another. It's more has to do with what's going on in the atmosphere as opposed to near the ground.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest today. And back to Cindy's first question. I've always wondered this. Is there a concrete delineation of the Capital District, or is it just sort of a vague thing?
It is kind of vague, you know, and even the Times Union, you know, who I'm partnered with, they don't generally use the term Capital District. I'm just used to that because the Weather Service does. So if I read their forecast discussions and, you know, and obviously having grown up in this area and knowing it very well, I just kind of have this, you know, I could draw maybe a circle around a map that would say, well, this is the Capital District. Maybe it's not quite to the level of you know, what is upstate New York, because that's a whole different story.
Let's not start that bad. Yeah.
But I certainly, you know, because then you have the Capital Region on top of that. So then the Capital Region obviously is a bigger area that encompasses, you know, that'll take you up to Saratoga and, you know, maybe farther south to, you know, to Catskill and Hudson, for example. So I don't, you know, I don't have a real map, if you will, of, okay, this is the Capital District and this isn't. I try to make the forecast as general as I can, but as specific as I can at the same time, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 as we talk weather today on Vox Pop. Elaine in Lenox. Elaine.
Hold on. Can you hear me?
Oh, sure.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, great. So I have a question about gardening and like gardening by the moon.
What?
I've noticed over the years that when I look up when I should weed and when I should plant and when I should feed, that it follows the weather. So sometimes it'll say barren period, weed, and then I'll go to the garden and I'll weed everything, and then the next day it will rain. Or it will say don't plant seeds now, it will rot in the ground, and sure enough, you know, in a day or two it'll rain.
Yeah.
It'll say good time for transplanting, so it'll be nice and mild weather for a couple of days. I'll transplant, and then, you know, we'll get some nice light rain, you know, whatever. So can you talk to me a little bit about weather forecasting that has to do with the moon, and is that why they have gardening by the moon websites?
Interesting. Okay. Jason.
That is interesting. And I, to be honest with you, I don't really know much about the correlation between the two. I mean, the moon, in the broadest sense, you know, the moon has a great influence over our planet, but in terms of influencing our weather, not so much. So I don't know, you know, what other nuances may be in there. That doesn't mean anything. There are a lot of things that I don't know. And certainly there are master gardeners out there, I'm sure, that would be able to speak a lot more intelligently about this than I. But for me, you know, what I would look at as a gardener is more patterns and looking at when to water, when not to water. You're looking at your soil temperature. You're looking at your soil moisture. Those types of things will also obviously drive how you would want to treat your plants and seeds and things like that, because ultimately, you know, they need the right temperature and the right amount of water. So my suggestion is, and I'm a homer in this regard, I would pay more attention to the weather than I would the moon. But, you know, that's something that's very interesting. I will definitely look into that. I'm sorry, I don't know really anything else about it.
But Jason, in fairness, I mean, you can say if you're looking at the moon and there's a ring around the moon, there's a fair bet there's moisture coming, right?
Yeah, that's right. But again, I'm going to, when I make a forecast, if it's going to rain tomorrow or the next day, I generally don't look to the moon for those answers. I'm looking more to the mathematics and what's going on the ground. So I don't really have the correlation there between the two. But yeah, it's certainly, you know, there are lots of things that you can see that might dictate what your weather is going to be for the day or the next day with a ring around the moon or the red skies at night, sailor's delight kind of a thing. They're not always, 100%, but at least it gives you an idea. And certainly, you know, mariners and gardeners and everybody that were doing their thing long before computer models ever came around, that was what they relied on, and they did the best that they could.
Elaine, what reference are you using for these moon phases and how they affect the weather?
Yeah, I get on the Farmer's Almanac, not the old Farmer's Almanac, just the Farmer's Almanac, and I just type in Gardening by the Moon. It gives you 1 month at a time, and I'll just look and see those kinds of things like weeding and transplanting and seeding, and it's always worked over the years. And whenever I've weeded, when they've said to weed it, I'm weeding a lot less than any of my friends. So, and it always seems to be that I'm weeding a couple of days or even a day right before it starts to rain. So I've weeded and it's had time to dry out, and then it'll rain and my plants are growing bigger, my weeds.
I'll be darned. Now, do you do that at night? Do you do it by the moon, like the Addams Family?
No, I just look on the website and they tell me what to do and I just do it. So I don't know how they're forecasting, you know. I could purchase a whole year of a calendar, but I just do it 1 month at a time. It's free. You get all the ads, but it's okay. And like I said, it's always really worked.
All right. Me a favor, Elaine. Jason, you want to follow up here real quickly?
Yeah. I'm just curious. So like when you say by the month, so will it tell you, so if today is August 5th, will it tell you what to do on August 17th?
Yes. It'll tell you the whole month of August.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, so again, I think, you know, for me, what if the weather changes in between now and then? Because certainly the Farmer's Almanac does not do a good job of weather forecasting. I don't mean to sound rude, but that's just the way that it is. But if you are looking, you know, that far in advance, certainly the weather has a lot to do with how many weeds you're going to have or how fast they're going to grow. I mean, this is a great example, right? We just got all that rain yesterday. The air is drying out. The ground is drying out. We're going to heat up over the weekend and into next week.
Yeah.
That's going to get those weeds going quite a bit. So, again, I would default more to the weather, what's going on in the atmosphere, as opposed to what's going on outside of it.
Elaine, do me a favor, if you can. The next time we do a gardening show, will you call in and talk to the gardeners about this? I think that they would really be interested in that.
I'd like to hear it, too.
I will.
Yes.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's weather. I almost said gardening. It's weather today with Jason Goff. And let's go over to Sam in Red Hook. Sam, you're up.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. This might be a simple one-word answer to this question, and it kind of has to do with the last call. But we know that, you know, climate's affected by the orbit of the Earth. And we know that the tides are affected by the moon. And I'm curious, are there any other astronomical phenomenon that can affect the weather?
Hmm.
You said a one-word answer? No, but
yeah.
I will say
no.
But I'm not very good at one-word answers. So,
Are you sure about that? Coronal ejection lighting up the ionosphere, would that not cause potentially some weather down the road?
There are things that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, pockets of heating, if you will, you know, things coming off of the sun with these coronal ejections and things, and the tides, you know, could have some influence, certainly along the coast in terms of weather and how, you know, sometimes you can get weather that will pop up right along the coast because you have differential temperature boundaries there. So, but in terms of how much influence these things have on what we feel and what we experience on the ground, it's not much. It's the processes that go on in the atmosphere, and most of that energy is coming from wind and from the oceans themselves, which, again, you know, then you're talking about, you know, El Nino and La Nina and those types of things. So there are large scale, I mean, all weather really starts on a large scale, and then it gets broken down and everybody gets their share or not, so to speak. So, you know, it is more a function of what's going on the planet. You know, the sun and the solar output and all that stuff, yes, it changes, but not enough to where you're going to see massive or even noticeable changes in weather from 1 week to the next or 1 year to the next, you know, in this short amount of time.
Sam, thank you very much for the call. It's Weather Today with Jason Goff. The number is 800-348-2551. Mary Ellen in Glens Falls, you're on.
Well, hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, I just moved back to Glens Falls after living in San Francisco for 50 years.
Okay.
And one thing I noticed on the years that I was there, I was born and raised here, is no thunderstorms. Only in the last couple of years I was there would there occasionally be one, and it would be way out in the wherever, but it would never like hit land or be anywhere around. What causes that we have these marvelous thunderstorms here and they don't get anything in Northern California?
That's a good question. And one of the reasons that I don't live in I love California, but when I first started looking for a job in meteorology, as much as I like California, I could never work out there because I'd be bored out of my mind because it either rains or it doesn't. So the short answer is that the air in, especially in Northern California around San Francisco, the air is very stable. There you have these marine layers, for example, that show up. That is really stable air in that sense, where you just have this fog that kind of hangs out. There's no wind to mix them out. And then, of course, as you go inland, the air is very dry. So you have bright blue skies and it's 100 degrees, whereas, you know, a Pier 39, it's, you know, 62 this time of year. So that's the short answer, is that you have much more stable air along the coast because the Pacific is quite cool there, as you know, too, even all the way down to San Diego.
It's a very cold ocean. Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So you have, on the East Coast, you have the Gulf Stream, which transports warm air up from the equator. And on the West Coast, you have the California Current, which transports cold air down from the poles. So that's why the water temperature in San Diego is going to be a lot colder than it is in Jacksonville, for example, even though they're roughly on the same latitude. So that's that difference, and that's why you get some major league thunderstorms in Jacksonville and you don't get them in San Diego. And then, as I said, certainly farther up the coastline in California, the air is that much more stable too. So you'll get some storms on occasion. Once in a while, you'll have a tornado in California, you know, with some severe thunderstorms. But it is a rarity, only a few times a year. Whereas, for example, in this part of the country, we average in any given year around 27, 28 days with thunderstorms. In California, especially Northern California, it might be like two or three.
Jason,
and they're generally not very strong.
Jason Goff is our guest. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Jason, we'll be right back for the home stretch.
This is very interesting. I'm watching the cable news here in the studio. Water spout spotted on Lake Erie. Did you see that news, Jason?
I did not. It's that's not terribly uncommon.
You ever see one?
I have, yes. They are phenomenal. And sometimes you can get, when I saw some when I lived in Corpus Christi, Texas, you can get water spouts without any weather around really at all. And typically, along the Gulf Coast or in the Bahamas, I've seen them when I've been fishing there. What'll happen is you have a lot of humidity, obviously, and you get just enough of a turn in the atmosphere and enough moisture that is lifting up and a little bit of that twisting. So you'll get those water spouts that'll come down. They don't last long. And again, they're not associated with thunderstorms or anything. I don't know off the top of my head if there's anything coming through Lake Erie. I don't think so. So it could just be the same kind of a deal. I'd have to look. I'm not home now, so I'd have to look and see if there's any kind of an upper level disturbance or something coming through that may have sparked those. But the bottom line is that you don't necessarily need thunderstorms to get water spouts.
Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. This email came in from Mark. Mark says, I've always heard that one of the safest places to be during a thunderstorm is driving in your car. Is it true that because of the rubber in our tires, lightning cannot strike us while driving? And that's from Mark.
That is a great question, and that is a common misconception. The answer is no. It has nothing to do with the rubber in your tires. I have heard that people have said that they're okay outside walking around in a thunderstorm if they're wearing sneakers because the sneakers have rubber in the soles.
Yeah.
Or a bicycle. If you had a car that had rubber tires that were 20 feet thick, it wouldn't make any difference. What helps you in a car, and it's the second safest place to be. The first is actually in a structure, but what helps you in a car is that you're basically in a cage. So if the car were to get struck by lightning, if you're not touching anything, the electricity will basically disperse throughout the cage, the car, the frame of the car,
yeah.
And then it will go into the ground that way. Planes get hit. There's every commercial plane in the United States has an opportunity to be hit, once a year. I think I read that somewhere. Every plane that gets hit once a year by lightning, and a lot of times people don't even know it.
Yeah.
So, and again, it's because you're in that enclosure. So, and a great way to demonstrate that is if you've ever been over to the Boston Museum of Science, the Van de Graaff generator, if you've ever been over there, it's a really cool thing. They have and it's a big, it actually almost looks like a Doppler radar in a sense. It's got this big dome on top and it generates electricity. And there's a guy or a woman that is in this. It literally looks like an old school bird cage. And they're standing in this thing. And it just has all these metal bars, and this Van de Graaff generator is just hammering this cage with electricity, and the person is inside, and they're completely safe. Mm. So that is why. But yeah, if you have a choice between a house and a car, you want to be in a house, and then a car is number two. If you're outside, if you're caught in a storm, get inside an enclosure and don't touch anything. And let the storm pass, but it has nothing to do with the rubber tires.
All right, we will get to the phones in just a moment. Now, I was watching a show the other day on one of the science channels on cable, and they were talking about ball lightning. And they said, oh, yeah, it's a common sort of misconception, or maybe not a misconception, that you're okay in a house, but this ball lightning will go right through glass. And they said glass actually conducts or passes the electricity very well.
Yeah, glass is a liquid, so it will do that. And ball lightning is one of those funky things. You can actually go on my website, jasonsweather.com, and read an article that I posted on there. I think I posted it last year, actually, about what is ball lightning. It's still a very, it's not very well understood, and it is, in effect, a rolling charge, and you hear stories from people where, it'll come in a back door and go right out the front door and it'll roll on through. And it might be the size of a bowling ball. It might be the size of one of those exercise balls that you sit on or something like that. But they can, they can wreak havoc to electronics and things. And I obviously have never seen it, But just reading some of the accounts from people that have, I'm not so sure that I would want to see it. It sounds like it's a pretty scary deal.
Agreed. And we've actually had callers to this program when you've been on who have seen it or say they have seen it. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Harv is in Stone Ridge. Harv, you're up.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm a longtime weather watcher. I can read a weather map and the radar and understand it. I've noticed over the last, I would say, 5 years or so, on the major media channels, some crazy exaggeration of weather coming in and weather situations. And just as an example, like a guy like Al Roker, like NBC News, talking about like how a weather situation is going to affect 60 to 80 million people. And I've also seen the infamous video clip of a weather person, a woman sitting in a canoe after there was like some dramatic flooding, like in Florida. And then I guess the video guys forgot to cut the tape, and they show the weather lady getting out of the canoe and basically stepping out, and the water is like 2 inches deep, and she walked away from the canoe.
All right.
You know, it's just so much exaggeration now with the weather reports, which I think diminishes the public's concern
yes.
and readiness when a real storm like yesterday's comes through. So I was wondering, Jason, if you could comment on that.
Yes, I'll be happy to comment on that. And you were spot on, too, Harv, by the way. And the reason for that is it is the television business itself. You have TV consultants, who I'm not a fan of, and they are trying to figure out ways. They were the ones that were responsible for this polar vortex and all of this. To me, I not only do I take that personally, it aggravates me beyond words, because to me, just to Harv's point, you don't want to undermine credibility when you're trying to convey, because weather can be serious, weather can be dangerous, weather kills people. Six people so far have lost their lives from this tropical storm that came through in the Northeast. So weather is serious. It is self-hyping. It needs no hype. And the reason that you're seeing an uptick in this is because viewership has dropped on television stations. So in that sense, the TV business is just that. It's a business, and it's a very uncomplicated one. The more viewers you have, the more money you can charge for advertising, and then the bigger your profits are. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. The problems start to leak into the ethical piece of it when you are enticing or you are flat out telling. Now, no news manager is ever going to tell you that they've told their meteorologist or whoever to, you know, really hype this up, but they still – it somehow still manages to make its way on air, and it is just more a function of trying to get people to watch because it's exciting. And when you see things like that, and you know, I saw a picture one time, and I don't know if it was doctored, but it certainly made the rounds from somebody from I don't know where it was, the Weather Channel or somewhere, and they were making pretend it seemed like that they were in the face of this 100-mile-an-hour wind. And then behind them, somebody was just basically walking down the street.
Hmm.
So you're going to see that from time to time. It's unfortunate, and it is a function of declining viewership. That is why you're seeing some of these things and saying, you know, 80 million people are going to be affected by this. Well, that's always been the case. And the bottom line is, well, how does that affect me? I mean, not that you don't care about 80 other million Americans, but how is that going to affect? I need to know what my local forecast is. And so it's just this overhyping of this that is just so unnecessary. And and at certain times, it's just downright dangerous because it can literally be the story of the boy who cried wolf if you're not careful.
Harv, never, never get Jason started on TV consultants. It's always a bad scene. You don't like them very much, right?
You know, I learned a lot from TV consultants, but I what gets under my skin about them is that they don't live in an area, you know, in all of these areas that they're going to, so that they don't understand the people. I had a TV consultant one time tell me that going to schools was not that big of a deal. It didn't really matter to people. Now, of course, my friends at Channel 13, they disagreed with that, and I said that, hey, I was told this, and they were like, well, that's okay. You go out and keep visiting schools. We want to have a presence in the community, and that's what we continue to do.
Right.
So it's just, you know, they're more like the numbers people as opposed to actually looking at the community as a whole. And, you know, how is somebody from someplace 1,000 miles away, how do they know what these people are, you know, what our people are like in our area? Because they do surveys and all of that. And there's a lot of science behind it. But I just, to me, it seems like it's almost too antiseptic and there's not enough feel to it. You have to go out and you have to listen to people, find out what it is that they're really interested in, and then deliver that to them. That's your responsibility.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, yeah, I feel the same way about radio consultants, too. And don't get me started on focus groups. Let's go to Bob and Bob in Clifton Park. Bob, you're on.
Going back to possible extraterrestrial influences on the weather, it seems like often when there is a meteor shower that it's cloudier than it would otherwise be, based upon fronts going through or something like that. Is it possible that the meteors, the fine bits of dust coming down through the atmosphere, have an effect on the cloudiness or otherwise of the weather?
No, sir. Quite simply, they're just way too far apart in distance. So if there's a meteor shower or an eclipse or anything like that, all you can do is hope for a cloudless sky, but the two don't have anything to do with each other. So that's about as simply as I can put it. You know, you want to be able to have some good visibility for these things. And hopefully, you know, we don't have cloud cover from a front or from a trough or something along those lines. So, but the two are independent of each other.
But, Bob, I feel your pain. It seems like every time there's a meteor shower, we get clouds and rain here. Although, Jason, did you see the comet last month?
I did, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was so cool. And it's you can still see it, by the way, through about the middle of this month. You'll be able to see it. It was, I think, it's right about at its brightest over the last few days, actually. So,
you know, we looked for it when we were up in Maine, and I couldn't find it. We found it here, you know, here in this area before we left, and I could not find it. I looked for the Big Dipper. We had no trouble finding it around here. Maybe it just was too bright in the background. I don't know. We couldn't. I thought it was gone.
Well, it'll be going soon, so if you haven't been able to see it yet, the clock's running.
It's very cool. Let's go to Meredith in the Berkshires. Meredith.
Hi.
Hi.
I live in the deep town, deep in terms of our valley of Hancock, Massachusetts, and I was wondering if downsloping and upsloping, which I only vaguely understand, would apply in our case, because we live at like elevation 1,200, and up on top of Brody Mountain, it's 2,300. Could you enlighten me?
Yes. So downsloping is a drying process. It's on a larger scale. So where you're talking about, you know, a specific place like Hancock. They're over in the Berkshires, you know, Jiminy Peak and all of that. So those downsloping is like it can be a nightmare to forecast it is a nightmare to try to forecast. It doesn't happen very often, but you can see it sometimes with nor'easters. And what will happen is you'll get a bunch of snow in the Berkshires and the Greens, and then, you know, you'll have whatever, 13, 15, 18 inches of snow, and Albany will get 4 or 6. And the reason for that is downsloping, being that warming process, it's a process called compressional heating. And it's the same idea that when you put air into a tire, like of your car, right? When you put it in there, that air is going to heat up. And you're compressing it. So when air is coming down over an elevation into a lower elevation, then it is actually being compressed. So it's going to heat it up, and then the warmer a parcel of air is, even in the wintertime, the warmer a parcel of air is, the more moisture it can hold, which means the less it's going to fall out of it. So, and then upsloping is a little bit of a different mechanism. Upsloping can be, in a sense, upsloping can actually create weather where if you're in the mountains, for example, and you have you otherwise wouldn't have a storm or even a shower that would fire up. If you have a flow of air that's coming in, it can't go through the mountain. It's got to go up over the mountain, and that's what's going to have that air cool and condense, and that will bring you the rain or whatever you get.
All right, Meredith, thank you very much for the call. And Jason Goff is our guest. Maybe one more here before we wrap up. Let's go to Clark in Postenkill. Clark, you're on.
Well, good afternoon. I just have a very simple question, I think. And being an old guy, 62 years old, I remember when the weather forecast was a guy standing in front of a cardboard map with a magic marker, and he drew a couple of things on there and said, it's going to rain today. Now we have this increasingly complex weather forecast. The atmospheric pressure is 22 millibars, and all these fronts, and all I want to know is it going to rain today. So why the overall complexity in giving forecasts and elongated weather time for the weather guy? And I'm not demeaning the profession by any means, Jason. That's not my intention.
No, understood.
It just seems overly complicated.
Yeah. Congratulations, well, Clark. You're as much of a crank as I am. All right, Jason, go ahead. You got a minute here.
No, I understand what you're saying. And as I was kind of lamenting TV consultants before, TV stations in general still have a good idea of what they're doing. And I think that the new and even not so new graphics packages and things that are out there now, they're actually really good, because when you're watching a forecast on TV, it's as much visual, if not more, than it is audible. So it's easier, and it's easier for whoever is delivering a forecast to explain what is going on. For me personally, I always found it a lot easier to explain a forecast if I could explain why the forecast is what it is, because then you're really creating a story, right? With a middle or beginning, a middle, and an end. And so these other things that are on there, cold fronts and you know, lows coming up the coast or whatever it is, it just gives people a better idea of what to expect and when. Because you're right, at the core, everybody wants to know, what's it going to be like in my backyard at 2 o'clock this afternoon? So, you know, this just allows us the time to be able to explain that as best as we can, because we're forecasting for a large area as well. It just gives a really good picture on that. Now, as far as like barometric pressure and things like that, I never included that in my forecast, because that to the average person means nothing. It doesn't tell you what the forecast is going to be. It's just more of a statement. So to me, that's a waste of time. And it could also, you know, serve to confuse the viewer, which you don't want to do either. So you have to find that balance of explanation, giving the forecast without giving too much information, especially too much information that's irrelevant.
All right, listen, hey, Jason, we are out of time. Jasonsweather.com is the website. Thank you, sir. Next time, perhaps that scotch, all right?
I'll look forward to it, Ray. Thank you, sir.
All right, buddy, have fun at the track. You're lucky to go. Support comes from Paul Smith's College, helping winter sports athletes pursue their Olympic ambitions while completing a college degree. Paul Smith's College. It's about the experience. paulsmiths.edu. At Mother Earth Storehouse, open 7 days, working to help keep our communities safe and supplied with EDC goods and services, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural foods since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Once again, thanks to Jason Goff for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producers, Jackie Orchard, Jordan Yuxall took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman at Valerie Rapson. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.